Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Triple Play Fantasy Network. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Chris Torres. I'll be your host today, flying solo for this episode. In part one of today's episode, I'll be joined by Chris Cotillo of Mass Live to talk all things Red Sox from a fantasy perspective. And in part two, I'll be doing a breakdown of one of my Champions League qualifiers and giving you some thoughts on individual players and overall strategy that I used during this draft. So let's get right into it. I have Chris Cotillo here with me. Very happy that he's able to join us. He's at this point definitely a friend of the show.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, you know him as one of the Red Sox beat writers over at Mass Live. Also, the co-host of the Fenway Rundown podcast with Sean McAdam. Chris, thanks so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm good. This is appearance number three or four. So if that doesn't get me in the Hall of Fame, I don't know what will.
I have your plaque ready here. You are definitely in the Fantasy Baseball Beat Hall of Fame. So congratulations. Thank you. A big honor. But anyway, I know that you have been at Red Sox camp. So just want to get your thoughts overall on what this team is looking like. Anything that is that stood out to you so far this spring training?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is a team that did not come into camp with enough starting pitching and now has even less of it with Lucas Giolito going down. You know, that was about, you know, if you had me list the guys on the roster they could not afford to lose beyond Rafael Devers, who's their best player and superstar and highest paid guy, you know, Giolito would have been right up there just because he was the addition. He was going to be the certainty, the stability. You know, they'd made the move to move off of Chris Sale and go for Giolito and get rid of, you know, Sale and not really go after Paxton hard because they needed innings, you know, in a young rotation. And that's what Giolito has been giving his whole career, you know, 175. You could mark him down for that. He was hoping to go 200 this year. And to be out for the season, it's a huge blow. You know, I think from a fantasy perspective, that gives a lot of other guys an opportunity in the rotation. You know, I think everybody knows about Bayo. Pivetta is going to have a chance to, for the first time in his career, really be consistent. You know, he hasn't, you know, dealt with injuries really in the last few years, so he'll be out there every 5 days. So there's bulk there. But, you know, the younger guys, whether it be Cutter Crawford, who's definitely in the rotation, or a guy like Tanner Houck or a guy like Garrett Whitlock, who are competing for those four and five spots, or even, you know, some kind of swingman types, Josh Winkowski, Cooper Criswell, who nobody really knows about. Like, those are the guys that are going to have chances on this team, which I think is unbelievable compared to where, you know, we thought they'd be at the beginning of the offseason when people were thinking, you know, it would be Yamamoto, Montgomery, Sale, and then maybe Pivetta and Crawford. And now we're talking about, could Pivetta start on opening day? Just some craziness, I think, from the way it's looked. I think that kind of torpedoes their chances at contending, you know, as well as anybody. It's a really good division. Their bullpen's okay, pretty good. Their lineup has a chance to be pretty good. We'll touch on all that, I'm sure, but the rotation is so uncertain that it's tough to see this team being legitimate contenders.
Yeah, kind of puzzling what they're doing over there in Boston. I'm sure the fan base, I'm sure you, you know, probably at some point are sick of it. I'm sure they're not happy with the direction of the team at this point. And I could absolutely understand, you know, especially with Craig Breslow coming in, I think most people thought there would be a little bit of a shift here and into more of a win now team. And it just really doesn't seem to be the case. Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that Snell or Montgomery, any of these free agents, sign, or is that ship sailed?
You know, people always ask the percentage chance on that stuff. Sean McAdam, co-host of the pod, I do put Montgomery, I think, 5% the other day. Just, you know, the rationale, I think, is, you know, they weren't aggressive on either of those guys before. People looked at, you know, Giolito going down, and maybe they think, oh, you know, now we have an opening. Now we can fill him in with that guy. But the way John Henry and ownership is looking at it is, well, we weren't good enough to be worth going after these guys with Giolito penciled in for 175 innings. Mm. Now we're much worse. And so why would we sink, instead of $19 million in dead money into a one rotation spot, now we're sinking, you know, $45 million into that spot for one of those guys, you know, because you have to add in Montgomery and Giolito. I just don't think that the logic tracks there. I've said it's unlikely the whole time. You know, there's a lot of signs that are pointing that way. I think their budget's been set for a while and they're about at it. But, you know, every day that goes by here with these two guys out there makes anything possible. You know, like the fact that they're out there, we don't know what kind of deal they're going to land. You know, like I would have never thought Matt Chapman's market would crater to the point it did. So, you know, if one of these markets craters to that point and the Red Sox could make an exception, yeah, I guess there's a small chance of it. But I just don't think that at the end of the day, they're going to be the most aggressive team. And I think actually, you know, yesterday's news with Cease works against them too, because if you look at the teams that, you know, have been linked to really Cease and the top free agents, the Yankees, as you obviously know, the Angels, the Giants, all those teams, like those are the teams that, well, if they get Cease, they're probably out on the free agents. And instead he goes to a team that in San Diego that kind of came out of nowhere and they weren't willing to spend money because they're already in debt and all that. But they're willing to get a cheaper good starter via trade. And so now I think those teams that were still searching, whether it be the Yankees, Angels, Giants, Rangers, like that, though, they might be more aggressive on the two free agents. I think it's a 0% chance with the Red Sox on Snell, because for a team that's building for the future, giving up a qualifying offer for that guy and a guy who probably is now going to take like a 1 year, $35 million deal with an opt out and, you know, maybe 3 for $100 if he opts in, I think that makes zero sense for what they're trying to do. Montgomery makes more sense. You know, Sean again said 5%. I think it's probably around there, just for all those factors. Now, should they sign him? Yeah. You know, I think he'd be a pretty good fit. He spent the offseason in Boston working out at BC because his wife is a dermatology resident here. But, you know, I think there's just too many factors pointing against it right now. And I expect maybe now with Cease off the market, you know, we see one of those teams that I mentioned land Snell and the other land Montgomery. I mean, at this point, it's tough to imagine those guys being ready for opening day. They're 2 weeks out and you start, right. You know, the value goes down with, you know, every week of the season they're missing. So, I know these are big, you know, potentially multi-year deals, but that's a real thing. And it's not like Scott Boras is going to take these guys into the season unsigned. You know, it's almost impossible to think.
Yeah. All right. You mentioned Nick Pivetta and mm-hmm. I know you guys are close. So, I want to ask you about him because he's someone, honestly, I've been my co-host Mike makes fun of me with my obsession with Nick Pivetta as far as fantasy goes. And, you know, I'll be honest, I've been drafting a lot of him this offseason, just the gains that he made in the second half last year. Mm-hmm. Everything under the hood looked good. He changed his arsenal. His stuff plus number, all this stuff under the hood looks great. And, you know, he, like you said, he's going to be out there every fifth day. There's no question about his rotation spot. So, do you think he carries over the gains that he made in the second half last season? What's your outlook on him this year?
Yeah. You know, I think last year I was shocked at how well, after a little while, he took to the bullpen. You know, he was super pissed about being demoted to the bullpen in May. And we had a pretty public video that went around of me asking him about, are you afraid to lose your job, and him like kind of losing it because that's the kind of temper he can have. Mm-hmm. When, you know, he didn't keep his rotation spot after that, but he went to the bullpen, and credit to him, he was excellent. He was really, really, really good in a variety of roles, and like the way they were using him was a real throwback. Like, all right, Nick, you feeling fresh? Yeah, sure. Okay. You know, from six innings after an opener and warming up, you know, in the bullpen in the first inning, it's just like some, you know, crazy, crazy stuff to, you know, closing games. Like he would go six innings on a Monday night and come in for the save on, you know, Friday and be pretty good if Jansen was down or Chris Martin was out or whatever, to being back in the rotation toward the end of the year once Paxton was out and he took that role. I just caution that, you know, I know all the stuff under the hood is there. I know that there's always been the upside with this guy and that he was really good down the stretch. But, you know, like his whole career has been consistently inconsistent. You know, if you think back to you know, he on any given day, the range of outcomes is pretty high. You know, like if you're looking to stream somebody, he's a very risky type play because he's can give you like 7 no-hit innings on any given day against any given opponent, and then or can get shelled and be out of there by the second inning. Like it's a very wide range of outcomes. I've always thought that. And so for him to put it together on a consistent basis is something that, you know, no matter what the underlying numbers or the track record in the middle of last year says, he hasn't been able to do that yet. And, you know, the Red Sox are thinking him as one of their guys. You know, he's still, along with Bayo, a candidate to pitch on March 28th in Seattle, which, you know, that's another good way to really characterize what's happened with this rotation. A guy that you demoted from your bullpen in May to accommodate the return of the injured Corey Kluber is now in contention to be your opening day starter. That's how far they've fallen.
Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty wild. All right. Yeah. I know people push back, you know, when I talk to people in the fantasy space about Nick Pivetta. I mean, you have people like me who are super in on him this year, and then others who are like, it's still Nick Pivetta. You know, and like you said, he's just been consistently inconsistent. So we'll be.
But, you know, free agent year ahead of him. Right. Like, who knows? Yep. Maybe that could light a fire under him. I mean, he's a very emotional, reactionary guy. So maybe that's the case.
Which can be a good thing, right? But also a bad thing. So,
yeah. I mean, if he blocks you on Twitter, like me, maybe not. But on the mound, it could work.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, another player that fantasy gamers want to know about is Zidane Rafaela. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know you wrote in your most recent roster projection that looks like there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be the starting center fielder, especially now with Rob Refsnyder out, broken toe. So it looks like Rafaela is kind of the leader in the clubhouse for that center field job. What are your thoughts on his playing time and just his outlook overall this season?
Yeah, they want him to play every day, no matter where he is. So the idea of him, you know, being on the roster as a bench option, they're not entertaining at this point. So it's either the everyday center fielder out of the chute or the everyday center fielder at AAA. And, you know, I think it's just they have, you know, not maybe in the way of certainty, but just in the way of like upside, a lot of bodies for the outfield, you know, Jaron Duran, Tyler O'Neill, Willie Abreu, Refsnyder's now hurt, and Yoshida, who's now going to be, you know, the DH primarily. Like, you have a lot of guys that are capable major leaguers in there. I think, you know, they built in the depth because they thought about injury being a concern. You know, Tyler O'Neill's obviously a guy who's been hurt a lot throughout his career, and so, you know, they're probably not counting on him for 150 games, because why would you? But Rafaela, they view, you know, defensively, they think he could win a gold glove in center now. He brings a speed element that the Red Sox don't have in a lot of places, though they're getting better at that. It's just all about pitch selection with him and, you know, working counts and, you know, swinging at the right pitches. That's been kind of the knock on him his whole career. They've seen some improvements with that during spring training. I would say it's probably 70-30 right now. He makes the opening day roster. And if he does, you know, he can obviously be the everyday center fielder, and they're starting to be a little bit open to him mixing in at shortstop and second base. He can play both. He did that last year. He's considered an elite defender at short too already. So that really intrigues them. It's the bat that's the worry. But if he's on the team, he's going to be playing every day. And if he struggles, they're not going to bench him. They're going to send him down, which is the risk, I guess. But, you know, a lot of upside there, obviously. And, you know, if you're a team that is not going after these free agents and you want to see your young core, like, why not see him and Abreu and some of these other guys play every day? You know, I think that's it comes up with an interesting question. If Rafaela is, you know, playing every day, what do you do with Jaron Duran? Jaron Duran was like, this is not an exaggeration, and it's crazy to say it, literally one of the best offensive players in baseball for months and months last year. The number of doubles was incredible. The speed, the hustle doubles, the leadoff numbers. I mean, he had over 1,000 OPS to leadoff games. He was excellent. I think Red Sox fans have forgotten about that a little bit because he missed the last 5 or 6 weeks. But him, O'Neill, Rafaela, and Abreu really mixing and matching on a daily basis in the outfield. I would say Abreu plays every day in right. Rafaela plays every day in center. And then you have, you know, Duran and O'Neill kind of platooning in left with O'Neill taking some at bats with from Abreu and right as well. And then when Refsnyder's healthy, they'll have a decision to make too. And he's a guy who has mashed lefties his whole career. And, you know, I thought they could have used a guy like Adam Duvall, who was on the team last year for $3 million, but too expensive for a big market team, apparently.
Yeah, that $3 million. That's that is stretching the budget for the Red Sox, which is sad.
Right.
All right. You really you made me sad just now because and I read your roster projection and I wanted to ask you about the playing time for Duran and O'Neill because that really stuck out to me. I think most people figured that those two guys were pretty safe in terms of their playing time, but from what I read and what I'm hearing now. It sounds like there's a question there, like O'Neill, whether it's to preserve his health or whether, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like you think that he's necessarily just an everyday set it and forget it kind of guy.
I don't think that they, you know, can because they want Rafaela, as I said, to play every day. Right. And team chairman Tom Werner, the ownership talks to us like once every 6 years. And when he did, he mentioned we're excited to see more than 400 plate appearances from Willy Abreu this year. And I thought that was a very interesting comment. Like, you know, it was kind of like very specific for an owner to say, but he did. And that made me think, like, they think his arm plays are in right, which is very important. And he was very good down the stretch last year. So I think he's going to get, you know, the huge share of starts in right. You know, O'Neill can mix in there. He's a good defender. Right field at Fenway is hard and huge. So I think that they're going to mix him in there here and there. You know, I just, they have, those are, you know, four capable major leaguers. I think they made the moves they did not knowing exactly what Rafaela would be like. You know, if you tried out O'Neill, Duran, and O'Neill, Duran, and Abreu on a daily basis, that's, you know, a major league outfield. But if you have Rafaela in there, there's not enough spots. And the Yoshida thing makes it hard because, you know, he's an outfielder who you're going to have at DH. So I think they did try to trade, you know, from that group throughout the offseason for young pitching. They were unable to match up. There's been a lot of talk about Duran. I like his upside just in general as a player. But now I wouldn't say O'Neill or Duran is locked in as an everyday guy. You know, but you know, Duran wasn't last year. He was in AAA at the start and he played his way into, you know, being one of the, again, people doubt this, look it up. Like he was excellent and one of the best offensive players in the league over the summer in June, July. Before he got hurt and kind of a fluke thing at Yankee Stadium. But it'd be interesting to see. I think, you know, Alex Cora is going to have to play the hot hand sometimes, you know, where, you know, if Rafaela goes to play second or gives Trevor Story a day at short, maybe, then you have Duran can play center, Owen can play center. You know, O'Neill's obviously played a lot of left throughout his career. But they think he has the upside, O'Neill has the upside to play all three spots. So we'll see how it shakes out. I think, you know, and Abreu is more certain in terms of plate appearances than those two guys.
Really? Wow. Okay. That's something that I did not expect at all. And I think fantasy players, I'm just looking at average draft position for this outfield, and Abreu is way down there, pick 434. Yeah.
Caveat there is he's been horrible in spring training play. Okay. But I don't count spring training stats to really matter. So,
yeah.
That could throw a wrench into it, but they traded Verdugo in part because they hated him and his antics and stuff. And Cora was sick of
him. Oh, I'm so glad the Yankees got him. Jeez.
Right. but also in part because they felt like Abreu was ready to take over full time.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. You mentioned Rafaela is maybe an option at second base or middle infield there. Wanted to touch on Grissom. Any updates on his health?
Yeah, I think that's this guy is new to the organization, trying to get their arms around him. He came in kind of, early. They kind of pushed him in a way to get acclimated with the organization and had him doing a lot in January and February. He went to what they called Story Camp, which was the Trevor Story had an infield camp for some of the young guys in Dallas. So that was 4 days of, you know, full workouts and bonding. And then Grissom was part of their rookie development program up here in February. And so there was kind of a lot built in there. And when he showed up at camp, I don't know if he had done more than he historically had done in the off season, but he had a hamstring thing. He ended up pulling a groin. I mean, I would guess he's probably opener, which is April 9th, because they started a long 10-game West Coast trip. I mean, if he's still out on May 1st, I'd be absolutely shocked. And they're going to have Emmanuel Valdez play second in the meantime.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks. All right. Want to ask about the bullpen here. There's been a lot of rumors around Kenley Jansen, and I don't know. There just seems to be like a lot of whether it's health, whether it's trade rumors. Like, I just don't know how much we could depend on Kenley Jansen this season from a fantasy perspective. So I'd like to know what that bullpen looks like if, for whatever reason, like he's not the closer. I know he will be as long as he's healthy and on the team, obviously.
Yeah. But,
what does that look like behind him? I see a guy like Justin Slayton getting some steam here. People talking about him. I know Chris Martin had an injury. He was kind of seen as the next man up. What does this hierarchy look like in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, Martin had probably the best year I've ever seen a major leaguer have since I've been covering the team. I know it's in a relief role, so it doesn't get the attention, and I did cover Mookie's MVP year, but, like, just, I mean, he was a 1-2-3 inning every single time he pitched for, like, 4.5 months, and at a 105 ERA, he got a Cy Young vote. He deserved it. I mean, no one really knows about that because he was a setup man on a bad team, but he was unbelievably good. That's going to be hard to repeat that. He'll have the eighth inning for now. I think that's the strength of his team. Martin in the eighth, Jansen in the ninth. They've both dealt with some minor things in spring training, but, you know, Cora's told them, you guys are like 50 years old, each of you. So why don't you just tell me when you're ready and what you need? They're going to start pitching in games the next couple of days. They'll each probably pitch 4 or 5 times and be ready for opening day. And that's good enough for the Red Sox because, you know, these guys have proven track records. I think the guy behind them that is intriguing is Slayton, Rule 5 pick, you know. And what intrigues me, and knowing that in the fantasy world, saves are valuable and all that type of stuff, and is that if this team is not good and you get to, you know, July 30th or whatever the trade deadline is this year, Jansen and Martin are the easiest guys to trade on the team. They're veterans on expiring contracts. You don't need them down the stretch. And there's going to be somebody to take over. And Slayton, with the elite fastball and everything, even as a Rule 5 pick, like, he, you know, they gave up their 10th round pick from last year's draft to get him in a trade with the Mets on the day of the Rule 5. So they valued him highly. They just weren't high enough in the Rule 5 to pick him. I think he's a guy that could step in and be the closer if they trade those guys. You know, like, Schreiber's not here anymore. They traded him because they thought the bullpen was the strength of the team. They probably wouldn't have done that if they knew Giolito was going to be out because, you know, Whitlock and Houck are both guys who are pretty good in the back end of the bullpen. Houck was a very good closer a couple years ago when he did it. Whitlock was dominant in 21, but I'm thinking those guys are in the rotation and they're going to want to get bulk out of Winkowski, who was basically their seventh inning guy last year. So, you know, the guys in that mix could all close at some point if Jansen's gone, but Slayton's one. They really like Isaiah Campbell, who they got from Seattle for Urias in a trade. I think they're going to mix and match like all of those kind of optionable righties. Campbell, your old friend Greg Weissert, Zach Kelly, you know, some of these guys, Justin Hagenman's a non-roster guy that's looked pretty good, and Cooper Criswell could be kind of in a bulk role too. Left-handed, Brandon Bernardino's their number one lefty. He's going to get a lot of run. He had a really good year last year out of nowhere, and they have some veterans, Letke, Joely Rodriguez, a bunch of ex-Yankees that are in that mix. So I do think the bullpen's a strength for now. But at the deadline, easy to see, you know, Martin and Jansen getting traded if they're out of it, and someone's going to have to step up then. So I know that's 4 months away for planning purposes. It's Jansen's job until then. You know what? I could see him traded even earlier if they're not good. You know, we saw Chapman get traded, what, the beginning of July last year for a pretty good young starter in Reagans. So I think maybe that could happen. Jansen's not happy here anymore. You know, he's kind of pissed that they're doing what they're doing. Very vocal about that. And you know, maybe that moves the needle a little bit. Until then, until something happens, Martin in the eighth, Jansen in the ninth. And again, Martin was as good as anybody I've ever seen last year.
Gotcha. All right. So Justin Slayton, definitely a name to keep an eye on here. All right. Well, Chris, we thank you. I thank you for your time again. You've always been so gracious with it, so we appreciate it. I do want to plug a few things for you because I was reading your article that you wrote a few days ago about Garrett Whitlock and about the tragic passing of his brother and just, you know, that experience that he went through last year. And man, it was such a good article. I really encourage anybody who's listening to go check that out. You did a great job on that and just really captured, like, it was just like really well done. And what really stuck out to me too was just you wrote about Tanner Houck and how, like, it sounds like they're very close, him and Whitlock. Yep. And and just the way he supported Garrett, it was really cool. You know, it really was obviously a heartbreaking story, but heartwarming to see, you know, the support that he got from, you know, Houck and the rest of the team. So definitely go check that out. And also wanted to plug, Chris does a Zoom workshop for aspiring sports writers. Not even just sports writers. It's a workshop, you know, if you want to learn how to start a podcast or just get into the baseball sports industry. I've taken it. It was excellent. So I highly recommend, if you are interested in that at all, definitely reach out to Chris and, you know, get more details about it. But definitely wanted to plug that here. Anything else that you got going on, Chris, that you want to plug before we wrap up?
No, just the pod that you mentioned, Fenway Rundown. We've had some good, good guests. We kind of, you know, it's usually just Sean and I going back and forth, but we've had in spring training some really, really good guests. We had Story, Jansen, and Giolito. We have Chris Martin tomorrow. So getting the best players on a bad team to come on the pod.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks again, Chris. We are going to take a quick break and then I'll be back to break down one of my recent drafts. So stay tuned. Welcome back. All right. So before we get into my draft breakdown here, want to spend a few minutes reacting to the interview with Chris. So the first thing that stood out to me, and if you couldn't tell, I was a little bit surprised by his take on the playing time in the outfield. He seemed pretty confident that Willie Abreu was going to get a lot of the time in right field, and that would relegate Tyler O'Neill and Jarren Duran to more part-time play. And listen, I respect the hell out of Chris. I respect his opinion. I don't know, man. Like, Craig Breslow, one of his first moves when he came in as general manager for the Red Sox was to go out and get Tyler O'Neill. Get him out of a situation where he wasn't getting consistent playing time. So I just assumed all draft season, and maybe this is just me in denial. But I just find it hard to believe that he's not going to get some everyday run. Now I know I'm actually recording this the next day. I see that again, he got scratched with a calf issue, and this is the freaking thing with this guy, Tyler O'Neill, man. Like, another one of these players that wants to look like a bodybuilder. You know, I've talked about Stanton in the past, and it's like, why are you training as a bodybuilder when you're a baseball player? You know, it leaves you so susceptible to these soft tissue injuries. So I don't know. Maybe Chris is right, and they are going to try to protect his health that way and give him more days off. So listen, if that's the case, he's probably not going to pay off his ADP, especially now. It looks like it's been rising. He's at like pick 200, I saw in the first main event here. So I'm probably just given, and now with this calf issue that I just saw, probably going to be off him the rest of draft season. I already have enough shares, so we'll see how that all shakes out in the outfield there. But if Willie Abreu does get a lot of PT in right field, then he is definitely a nice value for where he's currently going. Second thing that stood out about what Chris said is his comments on Kenley Jansen. And, you know, I've been off of Jansen all draft season. I just, the age and just the situation, just I don't like the vibes around him and this team. And what Chris said just confirmed that. Saying that Jansen is not happy and how they haven't gone out and spent money and they're not looking like contenders. Like, that stuff matters. Like, we look at stats and I'm big into projections and numbers and all the analytics, but you know, this game is an art and a science. When we are trying to predict player performance, like, we've got to go a little deeper than that. And if I hear that this guy who you know, is just not happy where he currently is, that to me matters. So just confirmation that I want no part of Kenley Jansen this year. I even just saw that he pitched in his first spring training game and gave up 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning. So I know it's spring training. I know it's his first outing, but just bad vibes all around. And I'm not interested. And honestly, I'm not even interested in this bullpen. I know Justin Slayton was a guy he mentioned, and I've been hearing in the fantasy community as someone to keep an eye on. I don't know, like, if Jansen does get injured or if he gets traded, like, it seems like there's a lot of uncertainty around who would be the next man up. So a bullpen, a situation I'm not really avoiding. I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, the Red Sox haven't made up their mind on Tanner Houck or Garrett Whitlock for the past 3 years. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if all of a sudden, you know, if we saw Whitlock or Houck get save opportunities, even though it looks like they're in the rotation currently. Who knows? So, yeah, situation that I'm avoiding. It's just a weird team, honestly. Like, the whole everything, the way it's constructed, what their goals are for the team. Like, I don't know what they're doing. It's really strange what they're doing in Boston these past few years. So, but that's a discussion for another day. Moving on to breaking down my draft champions league qualifier. So not going to go through the whole thing here. I'll do about 20 minutes or so. But for those of you who don't know, probably anybody listening to this knows about the Champions League contest, where you are playing 3 different formats. You've got a 50-team draft and hold, a main event, and a 12-team online championship. And those drafts get combined into one overall, and the top 15 players in the overall will then compete in the grand prize in Las Vegas next year. And I think the pot is up to now like $40,000. So it's like a no rake contest. I mean, it's a pretty cool contest. There's been a lot of talk about it on Twitter. So I signed up for it, and I completed recently my draft champions portion of the qualifier. So this is a 50-team draft and hold, no in-season moves, no free agent pickups. All you do is set your lineup every scoring period. So I got the 102, and this actually, I started this draft right around when the Ronald Acuña news came out that he was dealing with that knee issue. So I thought there was a chance I might have Acuña fall to me at the 2 spot, but the person in front of me did take Acuña. I ended up going with Bobby Witt with my first pick. I hadn't had any Bobby Witt shares, so this was an opportunity for me to get him. The guy is just a stud. There's really not, there's nothing I can say, you know, that's going to give any great insight into him. I mean, he does everything. I think there's even another level with him. I don't think we've seen his ceiling. So to me, it was, I was going to say no brainer, but I did for a second. I'll be honest. I thought about Spencer Strider there. And just the separation he gives you from the rest of the field, the rest of the pitchers. I see that in main events, it seems like he is the consensus second pick right now over Bobby Witt. So I do find that interesting. But ultimately, I couldn't. I'm pretty focused on getting a five category bat in the first round. So Witt was a choice there. In round 2, I was very happy that Michael Harris fell to me. I wanted to get an outfielder because I feel like those elite outfielders kind of dry up after the first 2 rounds. And Harris is kind of, in my opinion, the last of those. And I just love the all-around 5-category skill set that he gives you. You know, he's a 20 to 30. I mean, the upside, I think, is there for a 30 home run season. He's going to give you 20 to 30 stolen bases. A 300 batting average is definitely in play. And of course, in that Braves lineup, the counting stats are going to be excellent. I think there's even room for him to improve if he does work his way more towards the top of the lineup. You know, remember, he was hitting more towards the bottom last season. I could see a scenario where he makes his way up to the 2 hole. And if anything happens to Acuna, I think we saw in spring training that he will be the leadoff guy in that scenario. So I think there's some outs for Michael Harris to have an even higher ceiling this season and be a guy that we're really taking, you know, in that beginning of the first round next year. So Michael Harris was the pick in round two. In round three, man, I was hashtag blessed with this one. Zach Wheeler fell to me in round three, which is wild, man. Like, I was not expecting that. I mean, you're seeing now with Cole injured, you're seeing him in main events. He's up at the 1-2 turn. So Zach Wheeler in the third round, I don't think you're going to see that the rest of draft season. Really happy there. Not much to say about him. He's an ace. He's everything you look at is solid. So, you know, I was looking to go pitcher there anyway. Round three is kind of where I usually get my SP1. It's usually one of the Pablo Lopez, Kirby, Yamamoto, like one of those guys in that range. So I haven't had Wheeler fall to me. So this is my first Wheeler share. Was happy with that. Adley Rutschman was the pick in round four. And honestly, like looking back and just seeing the way that this draft unfolded, I kind of wish I went in a different direction here. I ended up taking Rutschman. I do like taking early catchers. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if Rutschman is that much better than some of the other later options like William Contreras, Real Muto, even Will Smith. Like, I don't know if this ADP is justified, but I did get him past what his ADP has been in Draft Champions. So I don't think it's like a home run pick, to be honest. I don't think it's going to win me the league, but I figure, you know what? I'm going to get one of these top guys anyway. This is kind of where he goes. I don't love any of the other options. I end up going that direction and it's fine. You know, sometimes you just got to shoot for par, right? Round five, I went with Camilo Duvall. Needed a closer. I've talked about this on previous pods this season. I'm definitely into getting my two closers in the first seven rounds. You know, I like getting one of those Duran, Diaz, Class A, like someone from that tier. Obviously, those guys were gone by that point. And then I feel like it's just kind of like a glob from Duvall to, I don't know, even Clay Holmes. I don't feel like there's like a huge difference there. But I just wanted to get one of them. I didn't have any Duvall shares. He's the guy, right? He's the guy in San Francisco. I don't think there's any competition. The team's not great, but I think they're fine. I think you'll have enough save opportunities. So, kind of fulfilling that RP1 slot for me. Round six was Gleyber Torres, and this is a guy that I have everywhere. He's underpriced. The projections say he's underpriced, and I think there's upside for more. Entering his age 27 season, a contract year, now with Juan Soto in that lineup. Don't underestimate that, guys. Juan Soto being inserted into that Yankee lineup, like everybody's on him now because of the spring training he's having. Oh, he's going to hit 40 home runs and blah, blah, blah. Like, he looks great. But think about the impact that has in the lineup around him. Gleyber Torres had, I believe, don't quote me if I'm wrong, or don't hold me to this, but I think he had like 59 RBIs last year, which was, I think he just got unlucky. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him jump up to like 90 RBIs at least, you know, hitting in the five spot behind Soto, Judge, and Rizzo. Just makes such a difference. And contract year, you know, there has been research that's shown that stolen bases do go up for players in contract years. Makes sense, right? They're trying to pad their stats. They're trying to make their money. So I think it's all coming together for Gleyber. And he just gives you everything, you know, and the projections, like all the different systems are pretty much the same on him. There's no volatility with Gleyber. So I definitely... in round six, I think he's just been a smash all draft season. Round seven, I got my second closer. Went with Ryan Helsley, first share of him as well. Was debating between him and Clay Holmes. Went with Helsley just because I felt like I was more confident in who his backup was. And in this format, when I'm not necessarily going for like the overall prize, I'm just trying to be in the top 15. I want to go for safety. And I felt like by getting that Helsley-Gallegos combo, who I got much later, I kind of locked up saves in the St. Louis bullpen. So yeah, the thing with Helsley, I'm just a little bit leery on his health. I know the velocity has been a little bit up and down during the spring, so he just makes me nervous. But again, just wanted to, I mean, the stuff is legit. The strikeouts are there. So just hoping he could stay healthy. And if he doesn't, hoping that I assume it's going to go to Gallegos as the next man up, and hoping they good old Ali Marmol sticks with that. Round 8. Went with Bailey Ober. So another guy I've been really into this draft season. I mean, Bailey Ober, yeah, and you're seeing now the ADP is definitely rising. He looks good in spring. The velo is up. The stuff plus is up as well. So I've just really liked Ober this season because I felt like he represented the last of the pitchers who are going to be a reliable whip asset. That is so underrated, man. It's crazy because whip is a category that we actually use in Roto, but sometimes I feel like we look at other stats more than that. You know, some of these like really advanced metrics, though they are great and could tell us a lot, sometimes, you know, just look at a pitcher's whip and see what they've done the past few years. And Bailey Ober has been elite in that category. And I think there is room for more growth. And I think the Twins are treating him, you know, they kind of had the kid gloves on to a certain extent last year. They started him out in AAA. They kept his innings around 150. I think the gloves are off. I think he's ready to go, ready to rock this season. And honestly, just the context is great too. Pitching for the Twins in that terrible division, with that rock solid bullpen behind him, I think all the Twins pitchers are in great position to get a lot of wins this season. And I just love the skill set, and everything in spring training is confirming that Bailey Ober is in, I think, for a really good year. And I think he's going to keep rising as we continue over the next few weeks here. All right. Going with the Red Sox here, a Red Sox player in round 9 with Tristan Casas. Didn't have any Tristan Casas before this. And honestly, I think part of the reason was if you look at his projection, he doesn't look like a great value. All of the systems have him for like high 20s home runs with kind of a middling batting average and like the 240, 250 range. And something that I'm trying to do a little bit more of, I've always kind of done this, but I'm trying to think more in terms of range of outcomes rather than get tethered to a specific projection. And I think most people would agree that 40 home runs is in play for Tristan Casas. I mean, there's a lot of comps I've seen for him as kind of like a mini Matt Olson. And if you look at the underlying skills, there definitely are some similarities there. So I just wanted a player here that, you know, my power was fine with Witt, Harris, Rutschman, Glaber, but I just wanted like a bopper at this point. And, you know, power, I know, like, you know, there is more power than, let's say, 2 years ago. Like, the ball was a little more lively, but I don't know, man. Like, I feel like it gets sketchy pretty quick in terms of getting a power bat that's not going to crush you like an average. Like, I don't want Max Muncy, man. Like, I know he's going to, you know, hit a lot of home runs and have a lot of RBIs, but like, he could hit 200, which he's done right the past few years. So like, I don't think Casas is at risk for that. And yeah, I just wanted a big bat at first base. So he was my pick in round 9. I was fortunate. I got Wyatt Langford at round 10. At this point, his price was already on the rise. He was starting to hit those home runs in spring training. And listen, I know that he hasn't faced the best competition. I know the grand slam he hit the other day was off of Buck freaking Farmer. I get it. But this dude is, he reminds me, you know, he reminds me of Julio Rodriguez 2 years ago. when Julio, you know, he was going like in the 200s all draft season. And then he showed out in spring training, and then his price kept rising and rising. He was up to like the fifth round by the end of draft season. And I remember I was skeptical. I'm like, is this guy really that good? Is he just going to hit the ground running and be worth that pick? Well, he was. And I think Langford, I mean, this is not like some flash in the pan guy. Like, this is an elite talent. And I think the price where he's going now, like I got him around 10. He's going much higher now. I still am in at that price. Am I going to reach for him? No, but I think he's worth it. Listen, the Rangers are not messing around when it comes to their young players. They had Evan Carter batting cleanup in the World Series. Like, they didn't give a shit, you know, like they put them out there. So I think Wyatt Langford is going to be playing every day in the middle of that lineup. They've showed that in spring training. He's got that 5-category skill set. So I was elated to get him as my second outfielder in this draft in round 10. Talked about Nick Pivetta with Chris. I've got a lot of Nick Pivetta shares. This might be my last one, to be honest. Like, even talking with Chris, you know, just the way, and I knew this, but like, just thinking about, you know, this is Nick Pivetta, right? Like, everything under the hood last year looked fantastic. I mean, there's really, you can't poke a hole in that second half in terms of just the swinging strike rate, the stuff plus, the command. Like, he added a new pitch. Like, everything adds up. If his name wasn't Nick Pivetta, he's going 100 picks earlier. But unfortunately, his name is Nick Pivetta. And so listen, I have plenty of shares. If he has a big season, my draft champions leagues are all probably going to do very well. But now that I'm getting into like my main event and my higher price leagues, it's just probably not smart to continue investing. So I'm good. I could see a scenario where he does just carry that over from last year, and he's just a legit ace. So I'll be definitely interested to see how that plays out this season for him. Bryce Miller was the pick in round 12. My first Bryce Miller share, was happy with that. You know, he's getting a lot of helium this draft season, and I think deservedly so. I mean, last year, I know he struggled in the second half, but he's a rookie. He was a rookie. I think we see a step forward this season. The addition of the splitter, I think, is massive. We talked with Eno last week about this, and he even said that Bryce Miller, if there's anybody that needs a splitter or that can use that pitch, it's him. And it's graded out really well this spring training. So if he could add that to his arsenal and be consistent with it, he has a weapon for lefties now. I mean, everything else, he's got an elite fastball. He's got elite command. The stuff plus looks great. Like, everything is, he's ready to go. Like, he's got 150 innings under his belt last season. It's not like the Mariners have a ton of depth. Like, they could screw around with his innings. Like, I think he's a full-fledged, you know, I'm hoping 175 innings pitching in a good ballpark. Mariners obviously know what they're doing with these pitchers. So sign me up all day for Bryce Miller. Jorge Soler, next pick in round 13. This was a little past ADP. Again, just wanted a guy who I could depend on for power. Everyday outfielders kind of start to dry up around this point of the draft. So I just felt like past ADP, I'm fine with it. I don't love it. Again, it's one of those, I don't think I'm winning the league because I took Jorge Soler here, especially him in San Francisco. I don't, you know, is what it is. But yeah, there's not much to say. What are you going to do? tell how enthused I am about that. Next pick was Jaime Candelario, guy that I do have also a lot of this draft season. Just felt like he's been undervalued. The signing in Cincinnati, I think, is just massive, massive for his value. Let's remember. All right, let's think of a career trajectory for Candelario. So he starts out in Detroit, which, listen, that's such a crappy hitter's park. I don't think we saw his true talent, even though he had some good seasons there. I don't think we saw the level, like, he's not such an elite hitter that I think he could overcome that context. Like he's not Miguel Cabrera, right? So he has that awful year in Detroit. Then he goes to Washington on kind of like a prove it deal. Nothing really guaranteed. Playing time was, in the beginning at least, wasn't completely there. Kind of hitting towards the bottom of the lineup. So I just think now that he got his money, he got paid by the Reds. They've said they've committed to him playing every day. He's going to hit in the middle of that lineup, in a lineup that I think is ascending, in a great ballpark. I really think you're going to call me crazy. Well, you know what? You can't talk back to me because you're just listening. So I'll say it. I think he could go for 30 home runs, 100 RBIs this season. There it is. All right. A switch hitter, man. Like he's not coming out of the lineup. He's going to be hitting behind, guys like Ellie, Encarnacion, Strand, like Fraley. Like that lineup is legit. All right. He's also got that multi-position eligibility at first and third. I love him this year. And by the way, just go look at his metrics. Like if you think I'm out of my mind, go do a comparison of the underlying skills between Candelario and Christian Walker and tell me what you think, because they're pretty similar. They're pretty similar. And Christian Walker, goes a lot earlier than Candelario. So that's my dude this year. That is definitely one of my dudes. Brandon Pfaadt in round 15. He hasn't looked great in the spring training, so I'm like a little bit, I don't know. I wish maybe I went in a different direction there, but just really like what he did in the second half and obviously just shoving in the postseason. And that matters to me. When a young pitcher like that goes on the biggest stage and performs, that proves something. So the rationale behind this pick, I'm like, I think he carries it over into this year. And I just love the context too. Being in Arizona, like Brent Strom is one of the best pitching coaches in baseball. I trust him. I another year of development and under his tutelage, I do think that Pfaadt continues to improve. And I think for wins too, I think that Arizona lineup really improved and it's kind of underrated. And I think the gloves are off with Pfaadt too. Like the Diamondbacks have been very deliberate in building up his innings count over the past few years. So projections have him for like 140 innings. I think we see more than that. I think we get closer to that 170 range for him. So hopefully the spring training stuff is just him, a little rusty and rounding into form here. All right. Let me get a drink of water. All right. Henry Davis, round 16. So another guy who is going to be more expensive, I think he is in main events going within like the top 200. And I think it's justified, man. Like his upside, I know it's annoying to have to carry him to start the season and him not being catcher eligible. But, once he gets that eligibility, I mean, it is just going to be wheels up. If you could plug in a catcher that can give you 20 home runs, 5 to 10 stolen bases, hitting in the middle of the lineup, not kill you. I think he's like a probably 250-ish hitter. That's valuable, man. That's really, really valuable at the catcher position. I think we're taking Henry Davis easily within the top 100 picks next season. I hope nothing screwy happens here where they like change their mind and they're like, hey, you're actually not, your defense or whatever isn't good enough to catch. Let me tell you what the absolute dream is. All right. Let's say Henry Davis, and this is like a 5% chance of happening, but I just, a man could dream. Imagine Henry Davis, like they start him out at catcher. Like I know Grandal's hurt, so it seems like it's pretty much guaranteed. Like he's going to start out at least playing half the games at catcher. Imagine like he is so bad defensively to start out. Like he gets his 10 games. He gets eligibility, but he's so bad that they're like, you know what? I think we're just going to put you in the outfield or put you at DH and make you an everyday player that way. Like, imagine how amazing that would be for fantasy, right? If we could get Henry Davis, everyday player, legit everyday player in the catcher position. Again, not likely to happen, but hey, makes me feel good. Jung-Hoo Lee was the pick at round 17. Just kind of wanted to balance out getting like a top of the order hitter, a guy who can just be a little boost in batting average. I feel like my average is okay. But you know, I felt like I could use a little boost at this point. So went and got him. Not sure what to expect. I mean, the projections like him, who knows, you know, I don't know how well they can really, you know, the equivalency coming over from Korea. So I am encouraged. He had a nice max EV in spring training. He's, you know, he could steal some bases. Going to hit leadoff. I mean, the Giants paid him $100 million. So he's going to play every day. So that was the rationale there. And part of the reason, too, like I already know, a guy who I ended up getting later as kind of his handcuff, in a sense, is Luis Matos. And Matos is a guy who I think could... No, I didn't take Matos in round 17. I took him much later, just to clarify. But I think Matos is the guy, he could work his way into an everyday role, even if nothing happens to Lee. Yeah, just go look up Luis Matos, like see what he's doing in spring training. I've been in on him all draft season. He's a guy that you really got to keep an eye on here. So I got Lee with the strategy of backing him up with Matos in case for whatever reason it doesn't work out with him, because I feel like it's somewhat of a similar skill set between the two of them. All right. Round 18 went with Griffin Canning. I don't know what the fantasy community has been doing with him all offseason. Like, I've just been waiting. I've just been sitting here in my office all offseason, checking ADP, waiting for that ADP to rise, like someone to like all of a sudden for like everybody to be talking about him on fantasy Twitter and like, oh my God, did you see what he did in the second half? Like, you know, everybody naming him as their breakout. I haven't seen it. And I don't know. There's just been helium around other guys and he's just been overlooked. I mean, look at what he did in the second half last year. He had a 28% K rate, strikeout rate, and a 6% walk rate. That's like ace level, right? And I know he's had injury issues and I know he hasn't done it over, it's 120 innings last year, which is, you know, decent. But I know he hasn't given you like a full season of those kind of numbers. But listen, at this price, I'm willing to buy in. He does have some pedigree too. Like he was a good prospect coming out of UCLA. So maybe he's just figuring it out a little bit later. I think he's 27, but again, it's been injuries with him. So I think he could be a guy like he's going in that Justin Steele range that, that Steele went last year. And I feel like he could be that kind of pitcher, you know, a guy who, cause I remember the talk around Steele was like, well, he had this great second half, but who knows if it carries over. And, obviously for him, it did. Not saying it definitely will for Canning, but I think the price is right to take the risk there. Went with another Angel next with Zach Neto, another high pedigree guy. Really, the skills, I think we're taking Neto much earlier if he doesn't get hurt last year. The skills were really good. He offers you a little bit of everything, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I don't love that he's projected to bat ninth right now, but I think that if he plays to his ability, I feel pretty confident he'll work his way up the lineup. I mean, we even saw him, I know it was a different manager, but we saw him lead off at times last season, hoping he could work his way back up there. And the thing with Ron Washington coming in, I think this helps because he said that they are going to be more aggressive on the base pass. So I think for a guy like Neto, that really boosts his value. And yeah, he looks good this spring training. So definitely like him at his current price. MJ Melendez was up next. Round 20. Needed another outfielder. Let's not forget, MJ Melendez was a top 25 prospect. And I know the last two seasons have been a little bit of a disappointment. I know now he doesn't have the catcher eligibility, but I wonder if losing that eligibility has led to us discounting him too much. He's going here around pick 300. I think he definitely makes sense in this range. I think he's a 25 home run bat, true talent, and he's going to chip in, you know, 5-6 stolen bases. It looks like he's not a zero there, and batting average maybe like 240, 250. So maybe he's not going to live up to what we thought he would be, but I think he's just fine at this point of the draft. I mean, if you look at the other players going around here, I think he compares pretty favorably. Jose Abreu in round 21. Now, I know I got some pushback. I put out a tweet the other day. You know, I really should like think about the way I word things. So I put out a tweet that nothing has changed with Jose Abreu, and look, his ADP has decreased by 200 spots. So many people, oh, what do you mean nothing has changed? He was terrible last year. He's old. He's this. And that's not what I meant. And what I meant to say is that situationally, nothing has changed. You know, it's my fault. I'm a cheap bastard and I don't pay for Twitter premium. So I couldn't edit the tweet. And yeah, I regret that because I understand like there is definitely risk. Like maybe age has caught up with him. I know he was bad last year, but he's still hitting every day in the middle of the Houston Astros lineup. That's all I need to know. If I played every day, all 5'7", 160 pounds of me played every day. Actually, I would fit in well with Jose Altuve. But if I played every day in the Astros lineup, I'm confident I would get like, I don't know, 15, 20 RBIs. All right. Probably not. But my point is that Jose Abreu, even in a bad year, had over 90 RBIs. Like, that's not nothing. So I think, you know, we saw him in the postseason last year. He crushed it, man. So I don't know if it was injuries with him, getting adjusted to a new environment. I don't know. But I'm willing at, I got him at like pick 308, I think. Yeah, I'll take the gamble there. I'm totally cool with that because really when you look at corner infield after that, it really gets dicey. Like it's Ty France who, listen, I'd rather have Jose Abreu over Ty France. Absolutely. And then there's not much. Like they're like Ryan O'Hearn, Kyle Manzardo, like these backup first basemen. Like I don't know what those other guys are giving me. I know what Jose Abreu is giving me. Just like they're gonna play him every day. So that was the reasoning there. Next, I took Chris Paddock, took him. This was pretty significantly past ADP for him. I've got some shares already. Just Twins. I'm obsessed with the Twins. What else can I say? AJ Puk, round 23. This was past ADP for him over the past few weeks. He's blown up draft boards because of how he's looked in spring. And I don't know. I don't love taking these guys that, you know, they've been, I know he was a reliever coming, a starter coming up, but he hasn't done it for years now. And I'm skeptical that all of a sudden he's going to be a guy who could take the ball every fifth day and give you length. And I don't know, but I'm just going to bet on the talent here. Pray he stays healthy. And I think even if, let's say, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out in the rotation, I'm full fade on Tanner Scott this season. So if Puk is not in the rotation, I'm pretty confident that he would become the closer. If you look at the skills, I don't know, why did the Marlins trade for David Robertson? Like, do these people in the front office, do they look at the stuff that actually matters? Because if you looked at AJ Puck's underlying skills, like you would just see in 5 seconds that the guy was just getting unlucky with his results. But his strikeout numbers, like everything under the hood was great last year. There was no reason to remove him from the closer's role. So anyway, that's just a pet peeve or a complaint I have because I had Puk on the team last year. But yeah, so just betting on the talent here, maybe he does, maybe he proves me wrong and he becomes one of these breakout starters. And in that case, at this price, it's going to be a really nice profit. All right. And it's getting late. So let me, I'll give you two more here for round 24, Brendan Rodgers. So I think this is a hack in the NFBC or even in leagues where you can make daily moves is to get these Colorado players. Brendan Rodgers is going to play as long as he's healthy. I know he's had a lot of injury issues, so there is that. But if he's healthy, he's playing every day, and it looks like he's going to be the cleanup hitter for the Rockies. So every time, every scoring period, when the Rockies are at home, and you look at who the highest projected players are for that scoring period, Brendan Rodgers is going to be a really project really, really well almost every time. And I think that is something that is just underrated with these Rockies players, like just playing the matchups, you know, and in NFBC, when you could switch out hitters midweek, like he's just the perfect guy for that. So, and I'm not a fan necessarily of spending like an early round pick on Rockies players, unless they are legitimately, you know, elite or really good players. Rodgers, he's fine. He's, I think, a good hitter. But at pick 350 here, I think it's a smash. You know, he's a guy I'm going to start at least half the time in my MI or my util spot. And I think the results are going to be really good. And lastly, Yoan Moncada. So Mike's going to love this one. I took Moncada here just because I want, at all my infield positions, I want to make sure that my backup there is an everyday player. And listen, I know the issues with Moncada, but he's healthy now. He's projected to bat first or second in that lineup. So I know it's not the best lineup, but if you're hitting at the top of a major league lineup, I'm interested. And let's not forget, and I'm probably going to say this for the next 30 years, but let's not forget that Yoan Moncada was once the number one prospect in baseball. I think he's still 27. Who knows? What year is it? I don't know. But he, I still think there's something there. And you, if you look at the second half last season, the skills were really, really good. So I don't know. But at this price, I'm willing to take a gamble. Again, there's like anybody after him is a platoon player. So I'll roll the dice. And if he's just my backup, fine. If he's just a depth piece, and if he actually does carry over some of those skills gains last year and tap into a little bit of that potential, then you know what? I have a guy that I can, you know, mix and match in my util and corner infield spot. So that's it. Gave you the first 25 rounds of my Champions League qualifier. You know, hoping, I know a lot of people are drafting this weekend, so I was hoping to give you some player takes, some guys that I like, and just, you know, strategy. Hopefully, I just hope this helped somebody out there. And hope you enjoyed the interview with Chris. Mike and I will be back next week. We have Gary Phillips of the Daily News, who's been on with us before. He's lined up to join us next week to talk about the Yankees, because there's quite a bit going on there. And, you know, want to get his take on that. So anyway, that'll be it for this episode. Appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.